KBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met with U.S. Special Envoy for Ukraine and Russia in Kyiv, General Keith Kellogg, today after President Trump said he would provide Patriot air defense systems to Ukraine for use against Russian drone and missile attacks. Zelensky calling the meeting with retired Kellogg productive and thanked President Trump for his support.
We are thankful to President Trump for his all messages and very strong decisions about resuming delivers for us. And we are thankful for bipartisan support.
Police say some of Beyoncé's unreleased music, along with footage, show plans, and concert set lists, were stolen from a car in Atlanta, rented by the singer's choreographer and one of her dancers. The theft of the five thumb drives happened on July 8th, 2 days before Beyoncé began a four-day residency at Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers draft is underway. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The MLB draft continues today. In the first round, the Brewers selected third baseman Andrew Fisher of the Tennessee Volunteers, who scouts say has modeled his swing after the Phillies' Bryce Harper.
I'm working on my swing in the cage a ton. I'm trying to emulate Harper as much as I can. Obviously, he has different rhythm in the box and different approach sometimes, but I mean, how could you not watch a guy like that hit?
In all, the Brewers drafted five players, two infielders, three pitchers. Yesterday, the Crew beat the Nationals 8-1. Freddy Peralta giving up just one run in 6 2/3 innings. Peralta asked about heading into the All-Star break, just a game behind the first place Cubs.
I think that we are in great position right now. We're doing great because we are not thinking about how far we are from the first place.
NBA, the Bucks introducing Miles Turner, who showed off his new jersey.
See me in this bus green. Heard my girlfriend tell me I look good in green, so you know it's gonna be a seamless feat.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. A lot of emails over the Texas flood situation and what's going on down in Central Texas. And again, you know, Trump's response, what do you expect? You know, his response, masterclass in arrogance and blame dodging. It's what he does. While you've got families who are still searching for loved ones, you've got entire working class communities basically rummaging through what's left of the wreckage of their lives. Trump flies in, does a little tour, photo op, congratulates himself and his buddies, incredible job, and then gets angry when someone asks what really is kind of the most obvious, simple question of, you know, why didn't the warnings go out sooner? And for that, he calls the reporter evil and wicked and, you know, it's what you expect. And, you know, his refusal to accept responsibility, his knee-jerk defensiveness, his contempt for accountability, it's what he does. So to be honest, honestly, I can't be mad at him. It's who he is. It's what was voted for. So when people say, you know, I didn't vote for this. Yeah, you did. You voted for Trump. This is what you voted for. This was the package. And look, that July 4th flood wasn't just a disaster. It was a massive heartbreak that just swept away a working class community. Homes gone, jobs gone, loved ones gone. And what it did is it exposed just how little protection we average everyday working people have when nature turns violent and, well, systems fail. As I said, in the early hours of July 4th, the sky basically just opened up. And how was it framed to me? There were nearly 4 months worth of rain dropped in just a couple of hours. And Kerr County, which got, you know, pretty much the brunt of it along the Guadalupe River, the river rose 26 feet in just 45 minutes. My mind doesn't even go 26 feet in 45 minutes. I don't even know. I don't know. And it just wiped out neighborhoods, summer camps, anything in its path, anyone in its path. And of course, it hit working class communities the hardest. Mobile homes, modest homes, small businesses, gone. As of now, as of me, you know, looking through this, 129 people have lost their lives. Children at summer camps, more than 170 are still missing. And you've got thousands of people who've left their homes. Who knows what the future is going to look like? And you've got these people who all they've got is the clothes on their backs. And you could go, well, you know, it's why we got FEMA. This FEMA? And look, these folks, they're not just statistics. They're American citizens. They're our friends, neighbors, our coworkers, they're our family people. And the warnings evidently did come, but for many, they came way too late, or in some cases, not at all. The National Weather Service issued their alerts. And if you had their thing, you got their alerts. And with a storm that moved that fast and with almost no local infrastructure for flood warning, people had no time to react. And, you know, the reporting that I've seen, you know, you had families who woke up to water in their bedrooms. And sadly, some never woke up. And the lack of a robust warning system, despite years of knowing the risks, left people vulnerable. The flood's aftermath, again, is a story of working class resilience and pain. Every time I see this, you know, I'm going, you know, these are the heart and soul, the blood, the fabric of this country. People coming together, local communities finding their way to help people, rescue crews risking their lives. But as the waters receded, you know, what's remaining is devastation. Jobs are gone. Businesses are gone. Paychecks are gone. People don't have insurance. There's a long road ahead. And hanging over all of this is the understanding that cuts to emergency services and warning systems have left communities exposed. Thank you. Thank you, Republicans. And for the Texas working class, this 2025 flood is just another bitter reminder that when disaster strikes, it's ordinary people who bear the heaviest burdens. These are the folks who are going to have to rebuild their lives while, well, their government wasn't really there. And the thing is I'm angry about this. I'm angry about, you know, how we got here. And I'm angry at the Republican Party, you know, who has, you know, for pretty much my entire life, convinced Americans that government can't do anything right. And then they make sure that nothing gets done by gutting, defunding, and sabotaging every public good in sight. They tell us government doesn't work. And then when they get the keys to the car, they slash the tires, drain the tank, and sell the steering wheel to the highest bidder. And when disasters strike, like it just did in Texas, again, it's working people who pay the price. They pay with their homes, they pay with their livelihoods, and in Kerr County, many people paid with their lives. Understand, this flood wasn't just a natural disaster, it was a political disaster. I argue engineered by decades of Republican policy. For years, local officials in Kerr County begged for a flood warning system. Something could have been done. Something that could have warned these families, saved children, let people get out of harm's way. And what I found is the price tag to do what they wanted to do was like less than $1 million. We're talking chump change compared to what we just handed out to our billionaires and our corporate special interests and what we're going to do every year. But here again, you got a state that's run by Republicans. They turned down those requests again and again. The Trump administration turned them down as well. Because evidently we've always got money for tax cuts, always got money for corporate special interests. We've always got money for those things. But when it comes to keeping working families like yours safe, oh, sorry, broke. We don't wish we could. Thoughts and prayers. And when the federal government, Joe Biden's federal government, with the American Rescue Plan, handed Kerr County $10 million, money that could have gone to flood infrastructure, what'd they do? They do what they do. Local leaders, egged on by anti-government rhetoric, spend it on other stuff. Or in a lot of cases, just flat out refuse to use it for what it was intended. And some sent it back. Because they don't want to be beholden to big government. Don't want to be beholden to Joe Biden and his socialist agenda. And I got to tell you, that's the poison of decades of Republican propaganda. Ordinary people voting against their own safety, their own survival, just because they're going to stick it to that big government boogeyman. We're going to get you. Meanwhile, understand, the real boogeyman? The billionaires who just line their pockets. The corporate lobbyists who are laughing all the way to the bank. What's the matter with Kansas? Thomas Frank was right. You know, they're voting in an interest. It's not their best economic interest. And in this case, wasn't their best safety interest. Because understand, every time there's a tax cut that comes up, every time Republicans get into power, they pass another round of big tax cuts for the rich, promising this time, we promise, this time, it'll trickle down. It'll get to you, working stiff. It'll get there. But what does trickle down? Well, we get worse schools, we get crumbling roads, busted water mains, and yes, no money for flood warning systems. The congressional record spelled it out. $2 trillion slashed from programs families depend on. Just to hand trillions of dollars to America's wealth class. That's your health care, that's your Social Security, that's your kids' education, that's infrastructure. Also, we can have a bigger, wealthier billionaire class. And of course, when bills come due, when the debt balloons, they blame big government spending. Never mention that they gave the money away. No, no, never mentioning that. Go back to Reagan, who borrowed and spent more money than every president combined in the history of this country. Ran up a debt second to none. To his time. For what? To create a billionaire class. Slash the top marginal tax rate from 70% all the way down to 28%. Caused a massive hole in our budget, in our spending. And what'd they do? Put it on the credit card. Borrowed it from Social Security. Those tax giveaway, those blew the hole in our budget in the first place. Caused the mess we're in. We're talking massive redistribution of wealth from the people who work for a living to the people who move money from one pocket to another. And then you've got Republican deregulation and privatization because they love talking about getting government out of the way. Job-killing regulation. And what that really means is letting corporations police themselves, cut corners, and when there's a disaster, they get to walk away, even though they created it. And when public agencies like the National Weather Service get their budgets slashed, when experienced staff are pushed to the door with early retirement incentives of take this now or we're going to fire you anyway, like we're seeing under Trump right now, who pays the price? Not the billionaires who live in gated communities with tons of warning. And if they need to, jets to get out of town. It's working families in places like Kerr County, left without warning or support when they need it, when those rivers rise. And when the worst happens, what do we get from Republicans? Again, finger pointing, blame games. It's Biden's fault. And of course, empty talks about solutions. And let's not forget thoughts and prayers. You got Texas Governor Greg Abbott saying, you know, winners don't point their fingers. Well, Governor, the only people winning are the ones who are cashing in on your bad policies. While 120 Texans, at least 36 of them children, drowned because the warning system that you refused to fund wasn't there to save them. That's not leadership. It's not. It's criminal in my view. And understand, this isn't just about Texas. The bigger part of this is about the whole political movement that spent the better part of my life telling working people that government is the enemy. Government's the problem. And the reality is every time Republicans take over, they prove their thesis correct by making government fail. They cut, they privatize, they deregulate. And when disaster strikes, see, we told you, government doesn't work. Can't rely on government. All the while, the wealthy, they cash in. The rest of us, well, we're left behind, or worse, left for dead. So for me, this is one of those moments where if I hear another Republican tell me, you know, government can't do anything, what you're saying is we can't do anything. Because one of the things I learned very young, high school, civics class, is government is not an outside entity. What the wealthy have done a masterful job of doing is divorcing us from our government. It's the government. No, it's our government. Our government does or supposed to do what we need and want it to do. Not what the rich people want, not what billionaires and corporations want, not what a single politician want, but what we, the people of this country, want and need. Because understand, they don't want government to work. They don't want it to work for you or me or any of us. Because once we realize that we can, through our government, solve problems, do things, they realize that they're going to have to be the ones paying for it because they're the ones who have hoarded all the money. Government sure does work for the people who write the campaign checks. But that's not us. So I've always said, rich people may have all the money, but we've out-procreated them. There are more of us. And if we could find a way to undivide ourselves, to say every community should have a warning system, there should be a way, in this day and age, there should be a communication system in place everywhere. That's not radical. It's not right or left. It's not red hat, blue hat. None of that. It's what should be. When we need people to get help, it shouldn't be, oh, well, you didn't vote for me last election, so we're not sending anything. Like what you see Trump doing out in California. It's time for us to stop letting the wealth class divide us. It's time to stop letting them sell us on the lie that we don't deserve better. And it's time for us to start demanding a government that works what's the phrase, work for the many, not for the few? Because right now, the handfuls are doing pretty well. Best democracy money can buy. Because the reality is, and I go back to what my high school government teacher said when I asked him, how do you know which party you belong to? And he said, well, you know, the Republicans are for rich and big business. Democrats are for the poor and big social programs. And you folks in the middle, you're going to pay for both of them. So you have to decide, which are you closer to? You close to being a rich corporation, or are you closer to being someone who is poor? And as someone who grew up in a housing project and who had to use clown money, food stamps to put food on the table, I'm still closer to that than I'll ever be to Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos. So for me, this is that kind of moment where working people better wake up to the reality that rich people don't care about you. Corporations don't care about you. You're as useful as the next job you complete to make them profit. And if you allow them to take over your government, take your government away from you, you're next in the line for disaster. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I want to take a couple minutes to go through a couple of emails, because I've got tons of them that I haven't been able to respond to all of them, but a lot of them are in the same bunches. So I'm going to use Brian's, who Brian writes, Rick, you're against Trump's one big beautiful bill only because Donald J. Trump got it done. If it was Biden, he writes, you'd be all in. And I'm like, no. And then he goes on to ask me, you know, what is it I didn't like about it, and what parts? And there's a ton. And if you listened, Brian, you would have known that for the last several weeks. Very clear on the winners and losers here. The winners being the top 1%, who are going to pocket an extra $30,000 a year, while the people at the bottom 20%, are going to actually lose more than $500 a year due to the cuts to the social safety net. So things at the top getting better, things at the bottom getting worse. And as I said earlier, I know I'm closer to being at the bottom than I'll ever be at the top. So I want to make sure that people at the bottom, that they're okay. Inequality to me is one of the worst things. The mass income inequality is one of the worst things that's happened to this country. And it's harmed our economy in incredible ways. But we're not allowed to talk about that. Also, I got a bunch on the tax on tips thing. Understand, many tip workers already pay virtually nothing in federal income tax. So the fact that they're going to get almost nothing, but Republicans have got this huge talking point. We cut tax on tips. Yeah, most workers don't get it. There's no real benefit for a lot of working people. And the fact that we've gone and we've cut Medicaid and health insurance subsidies and other safety net programs that are going to harm people, going to cost people their lives, working class people, low income working families. That's a problem for me. And to then say, hey, we don't have money for this, but we have money to give $30,000 a year to the very wealthy, just seems misplaced priorities at best, criminal at worst. The other side, Brian, and all the other folks who chimed in on the one big beautiful bill defending Trump's actions to repeal the 20th century, the child tax credit. I had a bunch of people say, see, he cares about the poor. They increased the child tax credit from $2,000 a year to $2,200. You go, wow, okay, it's something, right? Until you read the fine print and realize that the people who need it the most, the people at the bottom, they get screwed. Because the child tax credit law increases, yeah, from $2,000 to $2,200. But its maximum refundable portion is $1,400. So what that means, if you don't earn enough money to owe federal taxes, you don't get the full $2,200. You only get $1,400. So that's $800 of tax credit that's out of the reach of most low-income workers. Now, understand, the whole earned income tax credit thing, the whole child tax credit idea, birthed with Uncle Milty, Milton Friedman, and put into law by the sainted Ronald Reagan, was to appear to help poor people by redistributing wealth a little bit downward. to kind of raise up the floor a little bit while not raising the minimum wage. This tax credit's going to help upper middle class families, going to help, you know, solidly middle class families. It's going to help people like me. People like me when I was a kid, no. Screw job for poor people. So that's my argument there, Brian. Another one. William writes, Rick, you're probably never going to talk about this, but... Oh, William. He said, I heard your discussion with Greg Palast. He schooled you. Tariffs are always bad and should never be used. Greg was 100% right. You need to wake up. Your BS about political economy is just a Democrat talking point. You do realize Democrats were against the tariffs and solidly against the tariffs. You do realize that I'm actually going against a lot of the Democratic viewpoints in saying that tariffs are a useful tool in the toolbox. They're not the only tool. Trump seems to think it's the only tool in the box. I've argued it is a tool, like many other tools, to be used in a strategic overall plan. I don't go into my car's engine with a hammer, ever. Because it does very little good. Give me a wrench. That's another tool. Now, what Greg didn't say on air, that he said off air, from a political economy point, and I made this clear, if we open up the borders to Chinese electric vehicles, the auto industry in this country is done. It's over. You've given it away. There's no competing with slave labor. And that's where tariffs come into place. But we've been trained, like you, to think everything's a Democratic Party scheme. Blanche sent me an email, and this will be the last one for this segment. Blanche writes, it's absolutely astounding that you compare generations of people that came over here legally through different processes to become citizens to these, as you call them, undocumented illegal immigrants being the same. They aren't at all. Stop. Millions upon millions came here legally. This is where we're going to have a problem because understand, my grandfather's side of the family, you can trace their roots back to Pocahontas, the Pamunkey Indians in South Carolina and a whole bunch of things. On my grandmother's side, that lineage, white, Irish, Belgian, European, they showed up. They didn't fill out a form. They didn't get in line. They didn't find a line that they had to stand in. They showed up. They went through Ellis Island. They coughed. They got checked for lice, and then they went to work. This idea that they came here the right way—they showed up. And so we've got, you know, people coming. They're showing up, like my ancestors, like many of our ancestors did. They showed up before 1924. They showed up, and they walked in. There were no. There were no piles of paperwork. There were no years of waiting through government policies and waiting in some queue. They showed up. They didn't need a sponsor. They didn't need a job. They just needed to be healthy enough to work. And that was the right way, I guess. Just show up and be willing to work. If that's your definition of the right way, then yeah, they did that. But understand, they came from the right areas. And if we were in this moment right now talking honestly, the reason that we're losing our mind over the people who are here now is they didn't come from the right places. You know, they're not the right shade. You know, when we passed the Chinese Exclusion Act in 1882, it's because they weren't from the right place. That was the first big immigration law. But we sure abused Chinese labor to build the railroad, didn't we? And the reality is if your family is from Italy, Ireland, Poland, Russia, any of those places, you didn't wait in line. And most of the time, if they went through Ellis Island, like I said, wasn't nice, wasn't great, but there was a process. So for me, what needs to happen, Congress needs to unscrew up everything that they've failed to do. They need to create a reasonable pathway to citizenship for long-term law-abiding citizens. We need to invest in and modernize the process to get here. We need to find a humane way, an efficient way to manage the border. And we need to stop making these pay-for-play schemes that Trump's come up with. And we need to protect every working person. There is a framework to do this. Congress has failed at every opportunity. And this is where I wish, Blanche, that you would take the kind of anger you sent my way, because I didn't read the rest of the email, and actually point it at Republicans who shot down something of an immigration bill. Seems to me that's a good start. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Maybe I use it on the air. Gonna take a quick break, right back.
From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, warm and muggy with a low in the upper 60s. For tomorrow, sunny, warmer again, little humid, highs in the upper 80s. On Wednesday, a mix of sun and clouds, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. High near 80. Right now it's 78 degrees.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Milwaukee film critic Mr. Matt Miller. I know you saw this. I saw 28 Years Later as well. I really liked it. My wife loved it, and we're not really horror people, but just something that grabbed. It's just great storytelling.
It is simultaneously what you would want from a zombie movie and something completely different. It's just a really fascinating movie and one I hope people keep checking out.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, it's really been interesting watching MAGA World lose their mind over the Epstein files, which we now know exists because Donald Trump himself put out on Truth Social. So, it's got to be true, right? It's on Truth Social. But he's not thrilled with them because, well, of course, they were written by Obama, Crooked Hillary, Comey, Brennan, and the losers and criminals of the Biden administration, which makes you go, he's in them. He's way in them. And said he may have even, read them. So for me, he's in them. He's in them big. And, well, doesn't want anyone to know. And I got to be honest, the people who made their bones off of the conspiracy of Epstein, well, going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And here to share some thoughts on, well, this and all of the other top stories of the day, I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Good. So what do you think? We now know on Truth Social that they exist. Trump wrote that they created the Epstein files, just like they created the fake Hillary Clinton / Christopher Steele dossier that they used on me. And now my so-called friends are playing right into their hands. Thoughts?
That is the most desperate excuse I have ever heard. And I think the problem here is that he basically created the asylum and then hoped that people would behave.
Right.
And I what's crazy to me is this idea that these files only came from the Biden administration, because if you remember, they arrested Epstein under the Trump administration. Bill Barr was in charge of all of this stuff. Bill Barr was in charge of the Justice Department whenever Epstein killed himself. And so I'm curious how much of it really was written by the Biden Justice Department, or how much of it actually came from Trump's own people.
Yeah, from Billy Barr. But understand, Billy Barr has fallen from grace as well. You know, did all of Trump's henchmen work, but still not quite absolutely loyal enough. So he's fallen down a bit. And you're probably right. He's probably the guy who wrote it all in there.
And what's funny is, despite how much he's fallen down and how much he's been trashed by Trump, the idiot still voted for Trump. Like, still was like, yeah, I'm voting for him. Like, wow, really?
Well, you know what side the bread your butter's on. And you know what? For me, it was interesting watching Patel and Bongino, or watching them going, yeah, they're the Epstein files. Yeah, we saw there's nothing there. I was just like, he killed himself. He didn't kill himself, but you guys forever were saying Hillary got the wetsuit on, jumped in, hung him herself.
That's the thing, right? Is you have these two conspiracy theorists who basically made their careers off of the crazy Epstein theories, and then came into these offices where they would theoretically have access to all of this information, and I don't know if they actually have seen it or they haven't seen it. Apparently it was on Pam Bondi's desk for a while, and that turned out to be a sort of black hole. But yeah, these guys, you know, I think with Bongino, what's been interesting to watch is that I don't think he actually knows what's in them. I don't think he's seen them.
No, I don't think so either. He's so far done. He's just the mouth. He's the megaphone to get Trump's message out. You never let that guy in on the real deal.
And he's furious. Like, he, Friday, he was talking about, he basically didn't come into work on Friday. He took a mental health day, which I get it. I could definitely use a mental health
day. Sure, I could use a couple of weeks.
And like, the next 3 years would be great.
Unfortunately, most working people don't have that luxury. But good for him that the federal government, you know, supplies him with sick time.
And so I guess he's thinking about resigning. There were some talk that maybe he was going to just back out and be like, I'm out of this.
Goodbye.
Because legitimately, like, he really did. This was a big part of his show for a long time. And so he basically has to either screw over his readers or acknowledge that he was wrong.
Well, you know, well, let's frame this a little differently. Cause I don't think he really gives a, and I don't know, but I don't think he really cares about the readers. I think he cares about the money. This was a really lucrative conspiracy. He got millions of followers to give him millions of dollars. He's taken this job, couple hundred grand a year, you know, as purely a prestige kind of thing. I think right now he's weighing millions of dollars or my soul. I think he's going back to millions of dollars.
Maybe. I mean, it's hard for me because I think with Kash Patel, I think it's clear that he knows that he created this fake world. I don't know with Dan Bongino if he actually understands, you know, if he's like astute enough to really fully understand that what he's saying is BS. I don't know if he's just sort of caught up in his own BS. I can't decide because
having done this gig for almost 20 years now, and having been around these people as often as I have been from Hannity on down, having interacted with them, I've come to the reality that it's all about the sale. There aren't many true believers. If Bongino turns out to be one of those absolute true believers, then I will give him the credit he's due. But I think, you know, for me, most of the folks who do what they do, it's all about the Benjamins. It's all about what's going into the coffers, where the message is secondary to just getting the outrage and the chaos that they need to bring dollars in.
Maybe. I mean, I think that was definitely true with Alex Jones.
Oh, absolutely. I've had, you know, fairly lengthy conversations with him over the years. The one time at the Talkers convention years ago. You know, I talked to him for about a half an hour. Sane, rational, lucid, actual conversation. The second that guy hit the stage, man, he went from zero to crazy in the blink of an eye. Because it's a great shtick. I think drugs and some alcohol and some other things may have moved him. Not sure. But from the outside looking in, yeah, that's kind of how it appears to me.
And his video that he released where he just like was trying to like squeeze out tears out of his eyes. He filmed it like in a car. I don't know if that's his new like cash cab kind of a job or something, that he films stuff in his car since he lost the InfoWars and all of that money. But yeah, he talked about feeling betrayed, and that was just the chef's kiss.
Right. So do they then turn on, let's say Bongino goes back, does he then turn on Trump? Does this become a thing where he's going, you know, Trump's part of the, you know, the deep state, part of the pedophile ring? Cause look, you know, I've listened to Trump on Howard Stern's show for years ago, and it was always entertaining, and it was always a bit creepy, like the line, if my daughter weren't my daughter, I'd be dating her, which, you know, you never say that about your own daughter, ever. Those
Cringe.
Words never
Cringe.
Come out of your mouth.
Yeah, that's gross. But yeah, the thing about, I think Bongino is, all of these people that he, again, like the asylum folks that he stirred up, I think he's basically put himself in a position where that's his only gig. So it's like, if he wants to stay in the FBI, I'm sure he probably could, but I don't know what kind of career he has after this, because I don't, like, it's become clear that the MAGA people, they're not going to go away on this Epstein thing. You can tell that Donald Trump is trying everything he possibly can to distract. He even brought up Rosie O'Donnell over the weekend. Like, that's how desperate he was.
Wow, going that deep in the bag of tricks.
And her response to it was beautiful. She basically was like, dude, you're coming after me to hide from the Epstein files? I mean, it was just perfect. It was perfect.
No, but look, everyone's seen the video of him, you know, looking at, you know, at young women and mucking it up and you know, arm in arm and, you know, all of that. There's no way that you can say, we didn't know each other. We didn't do anything. It was innocent. There's no way that flies. Not even to the most loyal red hat.
I mean, every story out of Trump's history, every cringe story involves something where he's done something inappropriate with young women.
Yep.
The Miss Universe pageant.
The Miss Teen Universe pageant.
Yes, yes.
No, let's be accurate. The Miss Teen, and he went on Howard Stern and said that yes, he used to go through the dressing room to check out the talent, 15-year-olds,
to inspect.
Yeah,
yeah, and that they would be wandering around in their underpants and whatever. And yeah, the dude is so cringe, and has been, you know, his entire life. And I still cannot figure out, like, why MAGA people gave him a pass for it. But, you know, all of that, I think, obviously is coming back to haunt him.
Well, we know why. Because Jesus, I hate being, you know, flip like that, but Jesus, you know, God wants him here. In fact, you know, yesterday was the year anniversary of the so-called assassination attempt. And from what reports are, you know, Trump is taking on this kind of messianic persona that, you know, God wants him here. God saved him to do all of these horrible things that he's doing, you know, like taking food out of the mouths of children and killing old people. That's God's will. But that's why they stuck with him. That's why the evangelicals came. You know, the story of, you know, I sent you all these imperfect people to save you and you turned them away. They got the most imperfect person possible.
Clearly. And that's the idea, this whole concept of Trump becoming more godly because of his, you know, his attack is just a joke, because, I mean, we've seen him turn this into an all about me thing. Like, it really still is an embrace of his narcissism and a complete ignoring of everything that is even remotely godly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, his everything that he does is just horrific. Over the weekend, the ICE guys who arrested like a couple dozen kids in Ventura was like children handcuffed, all of these children. I wrote a story last week about ICE going after these kids playing baseball, and their coach was just like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, get away from these children. What happened to stranger danger, right?
Oh no. As long as you're wearing a mask and you've written, you've taped ice on your jacket, perfectly fine. Don't worry about it. It's perfectly fine. I do gotta get to another story though, because, you know, it's been really bugging me with the Texas flood and everything that's going on there, and Trump's reaction to the reporter simply asking questions that somehow, I guess, evil, or I don't know. Walk me through it.
Yeah. So on Friday, he did a press conference. He took Melania down to Texas and met with all of the Republican electeds. And
I wonder how much he had to pay for her to go.
Seriously. But she was very, I feel like, warm for her. I mean, considering that we saw Melania in a jacket that said, "I really don't care. Do you?" Anytime she's like, "My prayers are with you," I'm like shocked.
Yeah, you pray. sorry. So, didn't mean that to come out.
I know, right? So on Friday, he had a local CBS reporter, I think out of Houston, who basically asked, you know, what do you tell the families who take issue with the fact that they did not get the alert that went out, I guess, on the NOAA radios. If you have a NOAA weather radio, that alert went out because NOAA and the National Weather Service sent out their alert that this is going to happen, like, you know, seek shelter. And that did not get sent out to the, you know, the massive text messages that people get when your phone scares the heck out of you. That didn't go out, and that is under FEMA's responsibility and the county's responsibility. So this has become a whole conversation about, you know, who's responsible for this, and could lives have been saved? And then come to find out, when they applied for the grant for the siren system, they applied for it during the Trump administration. It was a federal grant. I had thought that this was like a state thing, but no, it was under the Trump administration. The Trump administration turned them down. So the city or the county reapplied for the grant, and then it got through to the Biden administration, and Biden's people were like, "Yeah, heck yeah, you need these," and they wouldn't accept the money because it was from a communist. People died, children died, because you think that Joe Biden is a communist. Yeah. Okay.
No, I mean, it's frightening what's happened. And this is what, you know, business-run government, this is what partisan-run government looks like. And the sad reality is it's, you know, some of his own people.
It is. And, I mean, the thing that happened, too, during that press conference is there were so many right-wing reporters that I feel like it was just some sort of pat Trump on the back moment. And it seemed to me like the governor was really trying to change the message about the government's response, because the other piece of this is that that Trump and Kristi Noem, who's the head of Homeland Security, want to get rid of FEMA. And so the guy who runs FEMA has been nowhere to be found. I guess a couple of days after the flood, he was at an event in New Orleans, and somebody was like, "Shouldn't you be on the ground in Texas right now?"
Yeah. And look, if you had a functional left-wing media, if you had any left-wing media, really, that would be the story, much like George Bush looking out of the window of the plane over New Orleans. Much like, you know, doing a heck of a job, Brownie. We'd hear those things. We just don't have a functional media to get this stuff into people's eyes and ears.
And that was one of the things that I remembered in the story that I wrote about it was, you know, remembering Scott Brown and, you know, the heck of a job Brownie, and the degree to which the Bush administration ignored what was going on for, what was it, like 5 or 6 days? It was an enormous amount of time. And what happened in Texas was it took them 3 days to get any kind of FEMA response. So this concept that came out of Greg Abbott's mouth, where he was like, you gave us the National Disaster Declaration immediately, and everybody was so quick to respond. And it's like, well, I'm sure he probably did give the disaster declaration immediately, but that doesn't mean that somebody's going to show up the next day. Team Rubicon beat FEMA there, right? Like, there were so, I think the in Oklahoma, the Baptist chainsaw gang, these guys who have chainsaws, like, go into areas that have trees that have collapsed and they help cut everything down. They went down there, and the fact that FEMA has just been asleep at the wheel at this, and maybe that's a piece of this where they they want FEMA to be outside of this. Kristi Noem wants this to be all about her. And so they can basically say, well, we've made this, you know, ineffective. Therefore, it's ineffective.
No, I mean, we've told you government doesn't work. We are now your government and it will not work, so that we can privatize and get rid of it or just leave you on your own. And, you know, when the fires were going on in Los Angeles and Trump went and did his little press conference there, it was really telling how he was like, you know, you should be able to go right back in your homes and you can clean all that mess up and you can do all that without any concern about, you know, all of the chemicals, the dangers that go in. Yeah, just go on. If you make it, yeah, so what?
Yeah, you first.
Right? Finally, I want to get your thought on, since Friday was such a big day, I want to get your thought on the Garcia Abrego hearing.
Yeah, so Kilmer Abrego Garcia has been basically fighting this whole thing out between Tennessee and the original case that happened in Maryland, where basically whenever his wife and family, whenever he was taken, they tried to sue the government to get him back. So that case is still going on in Maryland, and the Homeland Security and the Justice Department has been trying to get rid of this, saying, you know, well, he's already back, so this case is completely moot. The problem is that that they're talking about releasing him on bond in Tennessee, but if they release him, then ICE will immediately arrest him and probably deport him to a third country.
Right.
And, you know, what was it, like 8 guys that were sent to South Sudan? And so his lawyer was basically like, look, I have a reasonable fear of trying to get to my client in South Sudan. So, you know, that is one of the criteria for not deporting somebody to South Sudan.
So the question is, does Trump arrest the judge for interfering in him being snatched up and deported?
I mean, good luck. I don't know how often you're going to be able to do that. Like, the thing is the judge in this case is furious, just because a lot of the questions that she keeps asking the Justice Department, they're refusing to answer. Like, they had some guy from Homeland Security, from ICE, come in and testify. It was a guy from Los Angeles who knew nothing about the case whatsoever. And so the comment from Abrego Garcia's lawyer has been, they're intentionally doing this because they don't want us to find anything out about what's actually going on.
No, that's so, absolutely it.
Yeah. And so the judge in the case was furious and frustrated. And there was a lot of, at one point the judge said that she doesn't have faith that they're being honest anymore, which is a huge deal, that a judge would say that to either side in a case like that is just shocking.
Yeah, so this whole thing is shocking, but true. Obviously not surprising, because look at what they're doing. But this is something really worth keeping an eye on and paying attention to, and I appreciate you doing some reporting on it. Sarah, as always, great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
My pleasure. Have a great week, everybody.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day that Woody Guthrie was born in Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Guthrie became one of the most prolific songwriters to ever sing the stories of the working class. His most well-known song is This Land Is Your Land, an anthem whose lyrics claim America for the common man. During the Great Depression, Guthrie traveled from Oklahoma to California with farmers driven off their land by the ravages of the Dust Bowl. He talked with them and learned their stories and songs. He spent the rest of his life singing the songs of those downtrodden. His guitar bore the message, "This machine kills fascists." Guthrie believed in the power of music. His songs serve as a lasting impression for many musicians. From his own son, Arlo Guthrie, to Bob Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and many more. Even today, Guthrie's music asks powerful questions about how we as a nation treat workers. In his song, Deportees, Guthrie tells the story of migrant Mexican farm workers. His lyrics explain, "We died in your hills, we died in your deserts, we died in your valleys and died in your plains. We died neath your trees, we died in your buses. Both sides of the river, we died just the same." He ends the song by asking, "Is this the best way we can grow our big orchards? Is this the best way we can grow our good fruit?" Like so many of Guthrie's songs, these questions remain unanswered.
You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. Oh, they will call you the deportees.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Look, this situation with Kilmar Abrego-Garcia, one of these things that I'm paying a lot of attention to, because understand, this is a guy who they said he's a big gangbanger. They deport him to the El Salvadorian prison, that mega prison, that horrible mega prison. And then the Supreme Court says you got to bring him back. You think the administration's pleased with that? Do you think they're going to be pleased about having to prove any of the allegations? Because if this one goes down, it will shed a light that there's no due process. And as I've said before, and I've taken a lot of heat from people, especially red hats, which I'm okay with. Look, if he's a gangbanger, if he's committed crimes, if he's done wrong, we got laws for that. You follow the law. Due process. You give him his day in court, and a jury of his peers decides if he's guilty or not, and then let that fall where it is. But this idea that a bunch of people who are wearing windbreakers with letters on the back and their faces masked, that they are now judge, jury, and executioner, that you have an administration who thinks that, rule of law be damned, is something each one of us should be concerned about. You know, I had someone say, "Do you really care about these people?" Yeah, I care about people. But do I care about criminals? No. If they're breaking the law, we deal with them. But what we're actually doing and what we've created is an environment where we're going to spend billions of dollars going after housekeepers and gardeners and people who put food on our table. The lowest paid workers in our country. And what's interesting is I had a conversation with somebody who said, "Well, you know, Americans will do those jobs." I'm going, "No, they won't. Sorry, they just won't. And haven't for years." The reality is every generation of new immigrants coming into this country take those crummy jobs. And yes, as a union guy, I believe there's no such thing as a crummy job. You make them union jobs. But as my one friend reminded me, yeah, we can pay farm workers $30 an hour, but you'll pay $20 a bushel for strawberries. So we've got a lot of thinking to do. Do we want an administration to have the kind of power, the kind of outweighed power that can just snatch people up off the street and send them to some third world country, into some horrible prison? Is that what we want? Because understand, there are going to be Americans, and there already have been, who are going to be swept up. Could be you. Could be me. And then who are you going to tell it to? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Even my red hat angry people, love the effort. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show. where working people come to talk.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo today said he will campaign for New York City mayor as an independent candidate. In a video posted to social media, Cuomo vowed to run against Democratic candidate Zohran Mamdani, who defeated Cuomo in last month's Democratic primary.
Only 13% of New Yorkers voted in the June primary. The general election is in November, and I am in it to win it.
Authorities say NFL Hall of Famer John Elway will not be charged after his business partner Jeffrey Spurbeck was fatally injured falling out of his golf cart at a California golf resort community last April. Investigators found nothing criminal and ruled it a tragic accident. Elway did not immediately comment on the findings. HBO has officially started production on the highly anticipated Harry Potter TV series adaptation that network announced today. The show began production at Warner Brothers Studios in the UK and is expected to debut in 2027. This is ABC News. There's been a